The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
From a nightclub at the end of the world, I'm Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. It's Sunday, January 16, 2001. Last night I went to the world premiere of the newest Zeitgeist movie from Peter Joseph and the Venus Project. It's called Moving Forward. It's an incredible piece of filmmaking by the head of the Venus Project, Peter Joseph, who I've had some dealings with, and I find him to be both a very, very smart and a very honorable guy. Everyone who understands that the current human paradigm is collapsing, that infinite growth is not possible on a finite planet, and that the current monetary economic system is functioning inversely to human interests, needs to see this movie. I'm in it, and so were a few other faces most of us will recognize. There were many things that really impressed me overall. First, I watched the largest independent film release in human history take place simultaneously in 60 countries and 30 languages. That says almost as much about the movie itself as the movie itself does. I mean, what an organization. I wish I could see effective projection of will and presence throughout the rest of our movement. Maybe we'll get there. In L.A., there was a sold-out house of about 800 to 1,000 people, and I sat next to Peter Joseph in the very back row, and we watched the film together. And I wish the whole lifeboat sustainability movement could really organize in that way. What's becoming clear to me is that there's a global separation taking place into two camps of people. Those who believe in and serve the infinite growth monetary monster, and those, you know, the zombies. And those who understand that a radical shift in human thinking and action must take place, like immediately, if any of us are to survive. So I would put myself in CollapseNet, Transition US, Transition Europe and World, the Venus Project, and the members of the Running on Empty discussion groups with more than 7,000 active participants and a long historical record on the same side of that line together. The same would apply to the many, many thousands of students who have been through any of Tom Brown's wilderness schools. I'm going to be taking Tom's basic course in February, and after that, Tom and I are in discussions to start doing weekend seminars around the country. I think that's going to be a really useful package for a lot of people. We want to bring in some other great lights, too. So if I saw things that I disagreed with or saw as falling short of being a complete realistic strategy in Zeitgeist moving forward, I can say the same thing about the transition movement or Tom's training or any, or, you know, what we do at CollapseNet, everything else. The point is that we all understand the situation and we're all looking for a way through it. That should make us natural allies. I've never seen any group that has so well understood how the current economic paradigm actually functions. And what it's doing to us and the planet, and what the inevitable end result of this monetary paradigm is going to be. It's going to be, killing everything on the planet for the sake of profit. Just for the education one gets on that, the film's totally worth it. Zeitgeist gets that the single and only obstacle to humankind ending up in a sustainable future is the way money works. That's what has to be changed. Or as I've been saying, as most of you know, for a decade, until you change the way money works, you change nothing. The Venus Project, they've put an exceptional amount of thought and research also into a functioning and interconnected world originating from a resource-based economy. But that's kind of after the dust settles. They've done thinking that others haven't, and I, you know, kind of wish I could see some transition influence in there, but there's great, great stuff that I think everybody needs to see and we pick from. I saw a few holes, and I point them out not to be critical of Peter Joseph or a really incredible piece of filmmaking, but to show where all the people and all groups and the philosophies on our side of this line can help teach and share experience with each other. What we need is a rounded philosophy that can help us meet immediate challenges realistically. We cannot pretend there isn't going to be civil unrest. We cannot pretend that just having a garden is all we need. We cannot pretend that being a skilled wilderness and survival expert is all we need. There's a reason why Native Americans lived in tribes. We cannot pretend that we will not have to forge some sacred principles. Oh, there's that buzzword. Zeitgeist Moving Forward did some brilliant statistical analysis on the very high correlation between inequality and violence. And I really want to take a second to talk about this. Yeah, I mean, it was great statistical research. The correlations are just breathtaking. The more inequality there exists in a nation or a culture, the more violence there is. It's like an inescapable correlation that's unbelievable. And it goes back historically, and it's true anywhere in the world. And what do we see happening right now? The rich, the 1%, is gobbling up all the wealth in the world, and the disparity is creating a situation that, according to this research, can only lead to violence. Brilliant research. And I use the word sacred specifically and for a reason. Forget about religion and ritual. That's an old paradigm thought trap that tries to keep you from seeing the truth. Think of what you might say if you came across a murder scene, like, for example, Tucson last week. You might see the carnage and a dead child, and you might say to yourself, is nothing sacred? In this case, all sacred means is like a core, uncompromisable starting or anchor point. Some things are starting to become sacred as our understanding grows in this lifeboat sustainability, whatever we call this movement, everybody on this side of the line. A resource-based economy is sacred. A cessation of environmental destruction is sacred. A dismantling of infinite growth is sacred. These things have to be sacred, or else nothing else will be there for our descendants. And if there isn't something that's sacred, then nothing is sacred. And that's the kind of world we don't want to go into. Let's just take those three for now. We'll find out more as we go along. We can revise these, but we have to have some core operating principles on this side of the line. Everybody I mentioned is on the same side. We have to respect and work with each other, because this change of consciousness that is taking place very rapidly must have a seat at a global table where discussions are. We need a foot in the door to help start influencing and shaping decisions around us. We cannot just go into this as if we're riding a kayak over, Category 5 rapids without a paddle. We need to know how to paddle. We have to respect and work with each other, because this change of consciousness is so important. And we will sooner or later have a seat at the table, because events are waking the world up for us. They're driving the world to our... All we have to do is kind of shut up and collect the stuff now, because it's so clear that we've been correct about what's wrong with the world for a while. But whether the old paradigm likes it or not, we are like the billions of blades of grass growing up through the cement of monetary tyranny. And we're growing much stronger, and we're going to start moving the sidewalk soon, and we have to. Where Zeitgeist fails, in my opinion, is its envisioning of how we get from here to a different world and what will happen in transition. I heard a Zeitgeist member at last night's Q&A ridiculously suggest, still, I don't know how this can happen, that hydrogen could provide enough energy for a happy, self-sustaining world. That's tough. The ignorance, though, instilled by corporate media and advertising liars out there is insidious, to say the least, and certainly no large movement. What the Venus Project's demonstrated effectiveness will be without infiltrators and people trying to, plant some bad seeds in there. It's just part of the game. That's not the point. While Peter Joseph was amazingly prescient in seeing that the monetary paradigm is our only enemy, he left me short when he envisioned a global revolution of thought prompting people to suddenly withdraw all their currency from circulation and their cash from the bank. He didn't say how everybody was going to eat that night after it was done. And these are things we all need to work out. Nobody's supposed to have the answers. We can't hold any one person for that. We are making great progress toward finding them. The infinite growth disease is not going to let go without a fight. If I was frustrated by moving forward, it was also because it almost closed the circle for me, which is what I really want, but not quite. And I don't blame them for that. And I suspect that it will take all of us on the same side of the line to find a way to close that circuit together. I'm going to have Peter Joseph as a guest on the Lifeboat Hour soon. Next week, my guest is a really old and dear friend who I know occupies a warm spot in everybody's heart, former six-term Congresswoman and 2008 Green Party presidential nominee, Cynthia McKinney. Yeah. She'll be joining us. She's going to have some straight talk, and we'll probably both wind up going to jail that night, so you won't want to miss it. We've been planning on going to the same camp together for about a decade now, so maybe we can be roommates or something. What a decade it's been. Tonight's return guest is Bob Waldrop. I asked Bob to come back because recently he had a run-in with John Law over some really heinous criminal offenses. We're going to talk about those tonight. As one of the most senior activists on peak oil and peak oil preparedness, we all want to know what happens to Bob and each other and how he's dealing with it and what he's learned. But I'm really also glad that he's here tonight because it's just been a hell of a week, and I'd like to get over it like two old farts sitting drinking a beer at the end of the day. I hear him laughing out there. We need to talk about what happened in Tucson and how it's being dealt with, because it's becoming clear that Bob and I are and have been like scouts. We've been moving through uncharted territory for years and finding ways to do things. And just as important, it's becoming clearer by the second how important it is to have really good intelligence and good, you know, quote-unquote weather reports as we sail into the rough seas that are coming in our lifeboats. That scouting is what CollapseNet is all about. So here's the commercial, folks. The important work that we do at CollapseNet is to make sense of all of what's going on everywhere for you by looking at all the crises of our time: economic collapse, sustainability, peak oil, geopolitical and military events, resource depletion, environmental collapse, and what is obviously unfolding as the end of the world as we know it. We deal with it, we research it, we analyze it, we illuminate it, and we hook people up in some really cool ways. We find people like Bob Waldrop, like Zeitgeist, we bring them to your attention. And we try to facilitate the movement of energy and knowledge throughout our side of the line. Perhaps most importantly, we clearly see and acknowledge what's happening in the world around us. We provide a free lighthouse directory of information, now with more than 850 very uniquely useful goods and services, thanks to Susie Gruber, who's been assembling that for us for many months now. And we have services, training, and focused specifically on how to prepare for and survive the collapse of human industrial civilization and to make this transition. But what's proving to be one of the of utmost usefulness right now is our World News Desk. Testimonials from our members, who are often decision and policy and policymakers, prove over and over that CollapseNet's World News Desk is the best single stop daily news and commentary on the planet at any price. Thank you all very much for that. And we're only about 27 cents a day or 100 a year. Any active member of one of the 77 transition initiatives throughout the United States is qualified for a 50% discount on our membership. Just go to your monthly newsletter, copy and paste the coupon code when you sign up. So far, we've awarded 20 barter memberships for people who didn't have money, who were willing to trade a little research work for it. And it looks like we're up to like over 30 member blogs now. It's amazing. We're getting small regional blogs. We're getting input from all over the world. That's exactly what we want. That's what our hub, our social networking does. It enables people to really start find ways to share information more quickly. And just before the show tonight, CollapseNet broke 3,000 members in 57 countries. We're growing fast, and we're ready to grow as fast as you need us. And I want to thank all of the amazing CollapseNet staff and volunteers, everybody who has been working so hard. Your dedication's paid off. The only real security lies in relationships. Before I go to Bob, there's some lines from a Jackson Browne song. Jackson Browne, I think, is the poet laureate of American music, and he's had more influence on me musically than probably anybody else except for Neil Diamond, Don Henley, and Stephen Stills. But I just love the man, and I love his wisdom. And these lines have been running through my head ever since Tucson. And who are the ones that we call our friends, these governments killing their own, till the people just can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lives in the balance? And that's really the weight, I think, that sits on all of us tonight. So I'm really happy to have a guy with who I consider to have great wisdom. Bob, are you finally there now that I'm done talking? Hi, Bob.
Oh, excuse me. I'm here, and I've been enjoying listening to you. It's been very fascinating. I haven't the whole zeitgeist thing. I'm going to look up when I'm done, and
you should.
I'm always glad to find new stuff.
They have done some amazing work. They have, I have nothing but respect for the organization, and I really want to see like all of us sitting down and having like a summit somewhere. That may be a bridge too far, but I'm kind of moving in that direction. So, good. I'm glad. So what happened to you down there? Why are you an outlaw and a criminal? Tell us.
Well, there's certain penalties to being a loudmouth with internet access, I guess. Well, I live 22 blocks from downtown Oklahoma City in a neighborhood that was built up between 1910 and 1930 in a craftsman bungalow, which is, you know, where there was a whole school of architecture and urban design back in the day around that theme. And I've been implementing a five-year permaculture design for my property. And when I got here, the lawn was mostly just flat lawn, a few bushes here and there. And now I cultivate more than 100 different varieties of useful or edible plants on my former lawns. And as part of that process, I have a fertility system. One of the things you learn in permaculture is that every important function needs backups. So if you're going to do any kind of agriculture anywhere, whether it be in an urban area or rural area, fertility is a major concern. So you can't depend on just one thing for your fertility. In conventional ag or conventional gardening, you'd go buy some chemical fertilizer and spread that on your lawn and your roses and your whatever, and that would be it. But I use compost. I make compost tea.
So where's the crime in that?
Well, those things, there's not the problem. One of the things I do, though, is I use logs to border my garden spaces and to define spaces and to surround my garden beds and things like that. And therein lies the problem, because according to Oklahoma City, those are trash and debris. Now, I read the code on what is trash and debris, and because this issue had come up before. I've been doing this for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And each other time that it came up, I explained the seven different functions that these logs function in my little household ecosystem. And sometimes the eyes were kind of rolled a bit, especially when I got to the cat petting perch. But they left me alone. Well,
what'd you get, a citation? Did you get arrested? Did they have
guns?
No, I
didn't get arrested,
what?
But I got a code violation. And I have 2 weeks to clean it up. And among other things, what I have to do is remove all the logs that are on my property. All the dead wood has to be removed. And of course, they've been sitting there, some of them for many years, just kind of slowly rotting. And providing beneficial
sure.
habitat for other good insects that I like, and slowly feeding the surrounding area. And the whole idea of using logs is totally in sync with the craftsman artistic ethos, because in that period you had all these kind of keepsie lamps made from varnished wood, varnished logs, and furniture made with... You know, they would take a long piece of log and slice it in half and make the rails out of that and things like that.
So this is going to affect your food production?
It'll affect my food production. It'll mean that I'll have to ramp up. It takes away one of my sources of fertility and also one of my sources of beauty. Not a single person in 11 years has ever stopped by here and said to my face, "Your property is ugly." But on a very regular basis during the growing season, people stop when I'm out working in my gardens, and they say, "This is just incredibly beautiful. How do you do it?"
Mm-hmm.
When every couple of years I get a soil test done, and the people at the county extension agency say, "We don't understand how you can grow anything there because your nutrients are so high." And they are off the charts in terms of like standard gardening. Well, I don't know either, but I do, you know,
mm-hmm.
which just suggests to me that there are some gaps in our knowledge about what a chemical soil test means and what is actually possible in nature, because this is going on 11 years now that mulching and composting and compost teas and the slow, steady decomposition of logs. I mean, in the beginning, before I took a permaculture design course, I started with the logs because, first of all, I had them. They were cheap. I wanted to make raised beds, and I'm a frugal sort, and so they were there. But then also I knew kind of intuitively, if I want to make kind of this forest edge garden in the middle of a city, how can I have a forest edge garden without logs on the floor of the thing, just slowly?
And you ran afoul of the law.
And I ran afoul of the law. And The code inspector was very lucky that just the day before, you know, my day job, I'm director of music at a Catholic church, and I had just been picking music for the next couple of months. And in later on in February, at Mass, Catholics are going to hear a passage of scripture from the Sermon on the Mount about how you deal with controversies and your enemies. And so I read the passages all about love your enemies, do good to those who hate you,
turn the other cheek. Yeah.
And so I told her, she said I couldn't have the logs, so I told her the seven reasons why they weren't trash and debris, and she said, don't play word games with me, Mr. Waldrop. You will remove those logs, or basically they'll remove them for me and send me.
It's like Bob Dylan has a song, "Everything Is Broken." Yeah. We're at a place right now, Bob. You know, I have this band, New White Trash.
And
I've been following too that you're preparing to stay in Oklahoma City to ride it out. And there's a lot of people that are going to make that choice, and I think most of us are going to find ourselves winding up having to write it out pretty much where we are. There's a strong sense of being connected to home, and I know that, like, Oklahoma flows in your veins, and I've been reading about that. But I was prompted to co-write a song with the band New White Trash that had to do with people who said, I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to go look for someplace else to have the same misery. I'm sticking it out right here. And it turned out being a pretty good song. It's called Cold Light of Day. Here comes.
Cool.
You have to see it for yourself. Take a trip from Detroit down to New Orleans. I hear 100 heartbreak stories. Every one at least 100 broken dreams. Shuttering all the windows, knocked down, there's nothing left but one thing only. How cold it is to stay bright. Cold light of day in the brain. Cold light of day in the brain. Cold light of day in the brain. Cold light of day.
I'm not running away, I'm staying.
Everybody's leaving.
I'm not.
They're already gone.
I'm staying.
Everybody's left. It's a frown. Run away from this town.
Staying.
From the neon glittering crowd. Run away from this town.
I'm running away
from the neon. Cold light of day in the bright. Cold light of day.
Everybody's leaving, they're already gone. Run away from this town.
Run away.
I'm not running away,
gone.
I'm staying.
Yeah.
Cold Light of Day from New White Trash. The incredible female vocals on there were provided by Kristen Weigard, a good friend, good member of New White Trash. She just does a lot for us. You can find our CD, our album, Double Wide, at www.newwhitetrash.com. We've just had an official release this week, and we're selling some albums. Thank you all very much. 37 original songs. You can download them all for $11.11. You can get a physical CD sent for $22.22. That's a double CD. Or you can get a custom handcrafted sponsors edition for $55.55, and that'll make you part of our next project, newwhitetrash.com. We've had some questions come in. And by the way, tonight, if you want to ask Bob Waldrop or me a question, you can call 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I've already got a question for me and Bob, which will take us up to the break here in just about 3 minutes. Hi, Mike and Bob. My questions to both of you are, as you are both aware, the Chinese President Hu Jintao is visiting the U.S. this week. One, of what geopolitical significance is this visit with peak oil in the background? Two, does this visit have any bearing on the raising of U.S. debt ceiling by our mostly coward and corrupt Congress and Senate? Three, what are the key issues that the mainstream media may not cover during this visit, but regular people like us should pay attention to? Thank you, Himanshu Tiwan. I'm assuming that Himanshu is Japanese. Let me have a stab at that. Bob, you can mull on it for a second. We'll probably pick you up when we come back from break. But yes, it's a very important visit because all over the world now, China, there's a full court press going on against the United States, and it's global. It's eroding global hegemony. China is undergoing massive military expansion. They're building several aircraft carriers. They're moving strongly in economic circles. They're doing part of the Portuguese bailout. They're opening, 100 bank branches in Europe next week. And so the full court press is on. China is challenging U.S. dominance in the world, and the Chinese economy has just surpassed the U.S. economy in terms of purchasing power for consumers. Now, China's economy is very, very weak. They're teetering on the brink of collapse right now for many different reasons. We won't go into that tonight, but this is a hard bargaining session. And there's been a lot of posturing on the way, and I think Hu Jintao is going to come and make some stark demands, and I think the United States is going to push back. I think a lot of this that's not going to hit mainstream or be discussed is the fate of Japan. It's clear that the Battle of Japan, I think, is underway. China's kind of buying it, and the U.S. is vowing to defend it militarily. Japan is wanting to side with the U.S., but I can guarantee that geography will triumph in the end. China's got some problems with quantitative easing too. They've got a lot of issues they want to discuss. It's going to be a very significant vision, and I look forward to reading those tea leaves. We're sneaking right up on a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with Bob Waldrop in a second, and he can have a shot at answering this. Again, if you want to call in, 1-888-874-4888. We'll be right back.
are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down, or you're just curious, be sure to listen in. Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. That wraparound music for the break is also New White Trash music. 37 originals waiting for you. You can listen to them for free at www.newwhitetrash.com. Bob, I want to stay on larger, darker issues that maybe we don't want to talk about, but we need to. We want to talk about Tucson. We want to talk about the levels of frustration in the country. We've been beating our brains out, you and me collectively. We're old-timers, I guess, by some standards. About how to prepare people for this for a long time, and I don't think either one of us is going to say that we didn't see something like this on the horizon. How's it sitting with you?
Well, it's been kind of interesting to watch the political and commentating response. There seems to be a certain, feeling out there that the incivil rhetoric is driving the violence. But I actually think that gets the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. I think that the increasing violence, the increasing structural violence in our society, the growing inequality like you were talking about in the lead-in before I came on, is what is driving the violence. And I think I'm sorry to say, but I think it's going to get worse, and that this could very easily be the first of a wave of political assassinations, just like we saw in the 60s, that will pretty seriously poison, our political wells, and could cause very dystopic political and government
reaction. Not just assassinations. I see civil unrest. I mean, this week, gas was at $4 in Malibu. Well, that's not cause for a revolution, folks. $100 oil, however, may get here next week. Brent crude's at 94, something like that, and oil prices are rising very fast. As a matter of fact, a Total executive yesterday has just sounded another alarm saying that oil prices are rising too far and too fast. We have food riots in Tunisia. Food riots, by the way, are not over lack of food. Food riots are because there's food, but it's too expensive. Big difference. There have been riots over gasoline prices that we've been following on the World News Desk at CollapseNet in Ecuador and Chile. And David Cameron is now backing down the British Prime Minister on new value-added taxes on gasoline in Britain, which has gone to $9 a gallon. It was like a 72-cent rise last week before the value-added tax was to come in. It was very clear that Britain was going to explode. They're paying $400 a month for heat per person average, $360. And $9 a gallon for gasoline. You put that into your budget and see how it works. It's clear that, and here in this country, mortgage gates proceeding apace. We had record high foreclosures in 2010. They're expecting a 20% increase. That's conservative. And I'm more thinking 30 to 40% increase in foreclosures in 2011. In the meantime, the Federal Reserve wants to repeal the right of rescission, where if you bought a house with forged and criminal documents, you still have to pay off the loan before you can take them to court. I mean, what do they expect? And, you know, what was it? That was a tragedy what happened. But, you know, people can only be pushed so far before they wake up. And there is no answer in the old paradigm. There's no pot of gold that somebody's going to suddenly spring loose. These banks are not going to let go of the money. What does your gut tell you, Bob, about where this may go aside from the assassinations? I mean, do you think?
Well, the big question that's always been on my mind is what is the tipping point? What is the straw that breaks the camel's back? I see this on a micro level all the time, dealing with low-income people. You know, you have a situation that's been stable, they're getting by, they're just barely making it, but then something happens. Someone gets sick, they miss 4 days of work, they lose that income, so the electricity gets cut off. And then something else happens. And then something else happens, and pretty soon they're walking down the street homeless, carrying all their stuff on their back, and they just walk, you know. I whenever I think of this, I think about a woman I knew who had 7 kids, and we helped them out every month for a year, and then all of a sudden they disappeared, and I asked the neighbors, and they said, oh, I don't know, the last we saw them, they were all walking down the street, they'd been evicted, and they were carrying their suitcases. And we've never heard from them since, and I wonder what happens to them. Well, there's a tipping point for societies, too. There's a straw that breaks the camel's back. And where that is, I don't know, but I know that we're a lot closer to it now than we were, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would say now it's $4 gasoline. When it becomes, in very short order, the norm again. That was like a weather vane, you know, effect that you saw really connected with the last crash, which was just a warm-up for the depth and magnitude of the one that's coming.
Oh, absolutely. And this connects with, you know, the question about China. I'm sure, I wish we had a WikiLeaks to give us some transcripts of some of these private meetings.
Yes.
Because you know that he's saying, okay, you're not going to do anything that's going to endanger the money that you owe us, because we're going to get all of our money, and it's not going to be inflated dollars. And implicit, I think, in the heavy debt that we owe to places like China is that if we can't pay in dollars, they may want real estate. They may want our South Pacific possessions. They might decide they want Guam, the Marianas. They might decide that they want a couple of aircraft battle fleets. And you know something? If they come up and they demand that, we're going to give it to them.
Or they may want Apple stock or McDonald's stock, Coca-Cola stock, or Ford stock, or IBM
exactly.
stock.
They might want a state for extra living room. And, you know, and the Republicans will be just as quick to give that to them as the Democrats, because they're both bought, sold, and paid for by the big money guys. And the big money guys are in cahoots here with the big money guys there. And they are like, you know, they are like a cabal. That is them against everybody else. They're against the ordinary people in China, and they're against the ordinary people in the United States. You know, you and I have more in common with some poor Chinese guy living in a back street, just scrabbling to get by on $3 a day. You know, we have more in common with him than we do with their leadership.
Yeah, absolutely right. I've received an email asking me to make an announcement, which I'm going to do, which I'm happy to do, actually. I've been asked to announce that Nicole Foss, who was our guest a couple weeks ago, a brilliant economic writer and analyst. Her website is automaticearth.com. Nicole Foss will be speaking at the First Church in Oberlin, Ohio, on Friday, January 28th at 7 p.m. If you want to get more information on that, get out your pencil. You want to send an email to Brian Burgess. That's B Burgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S. B. Burgess, 2 S's, at Oberlin.net for more information. He'll get back to you, and if you're anywhere close, I'm sure you'll get something from seeing Nicole. Sorry, Bob. I'm just trying to keep all the stars and lights elevated here so everybody can see him.
I do not mind you publicizing the Automatic Earth and Nicole Foss's work, because that is one of a handful of websites that I read every day.
Yep. Yep. I mean, you know, we've had Chris Martinson on, and we're going to have Peter Joseph on from Zeitgeist sometime soon. And it's really important to hear all these voices because, you know, what we find is that we collaborate very well, like we do with you. Now, tell me about the Running on Empty groups, and are you having more activity? Are there emerging threads? What's everybody talking about on your listservs on Yahoo.com? That's Running on Empty for those of you out there who want to find it.
We got a nice little bump in membership after my first appearance on your program last time around. Traffic actually has been a little low, and that actually is kind of typical when things get really scary.
Yeah. Yes.
And I always figure it's because people have all of a sudden decided to get busy, and they don't have time for the internet. But, you know, I'm hearing some back-channel talk about, you know, that kind of confirms that. Someone who posts fairly frequently sent me a private email saying, well, you know I haven't posted recently, but I just have been really freaked out by the way things are going, and they're doing a makeover of their house, the same thing that we did back in 2005 or something similar to that anyway, for their own context. And he said, I just don't have time to post, but we're busy. And the internet provides a great way to find information and to find encouragement and to see what other people are doing. And sometimes we share scary stories, and it can be terrifying, basically.
I've been following, talking about the net, I've been following something that happened Friday. A Bank of America's web servers went down. Which made it almost impossible for anybody to do business with Bank of America online. And I was really worried that it was going to be attributed to a cyber attack. That's going to happen sooner or later, not just to B of A. It's going to happen somewhere. And when it happens, the internet's going to change overnight. I'm pretty convinced of that. But what it was, in fact, was just complexity. It's the way I read the explanations. It's just that they were switching to a new thing, and one thing went this way and the other thing went that way, and pretty soon their whole system was down, which is what complex societies do, complex civilizations do. I'm coming to an idea, Bob, and I just want to kick this around. It's like we are the two old farts sitting on the stoop drinking a beer.
Yeah, bourbon for me.
Okay, bourbon for you. Good. Good Catholic man. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm actually working real hard on my physical health also these days, and I'm on the low carb diet, so beer's not very low carb, but bourbon is just fine. So.
Oh, excellent. I like that. Okay, so what I'm starting to creep up around is an idea that we have to have many facets to our plans on how to survive this transition. I've found nobody better at tribe building, at relocalization, nobody who's doing more better than Transition US and the transition initiatives that are all over the world now. And hopefully they're growing rapidly. We just helped them to get over a $100,000 challenge grant, so they've got $200,000, which is good. They're going to need it, and they're going to spend it. But on the other hand, I'm developing a good friendship with survival teacher Tom Brown, tracker Tom Brown. And he teaches stuff that individuals need to know, because once you have that comfort level in your body, like I had when I was a cop, when I was training, you're much more confident to deal with situations, your brain settles down, and you begin to relate back to the environment. And my job as a scout, I'm the one who analyzes, who kind of helps people find out what's coming next and what to prepare for. But we need all of these things to kind of come together. And I haven't seen anybody that's got a complete package. Would you say you got a complete package?
No, I think that I have a lot of pieces of the puzzle, but I think that there are things that I don't know or am not involved with, but transition comes pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's like transition doesn't give me the individual skills that I can pick up through Tom Brown's survival school.
Correct.
And all of that is kind of not as useful as it can be unless you know what crises to prepare for and where and what's coming, so that you can adjust and think on your feet. So there's all kinds of things that are needed to kind of make this networking happen. And Zeitgeist Venus Project envisions a world coming out of all this that really has some really core global interconnectivity, which I think is a wonderful thing, and hopefully we'll be able to do something like that. We got a question coming in, Bob, from Richard Leach, good friend of mine. Hi, Rick, if you're out there listening. Mike and Bob, thanks for all the good work you do. Sound, prudent, thoughtful leadership is required. Keep it up. I guess he's talking about you, Bob. My question is about the end of the charade by the U.S., possibly world governments. Within the past week, the CFTM allowed J.P. Morgan, Commodities Future Trading Commission, I think it is, CFTC maybe, I don't know, allowed J.P. Morgan to break the rules, yes, regarding position limits for silver. The rules are being broken everywhere. In other words, the rules that apply to you and me and other commodities traders do not apply to J.P. Morgan. To quote Frank Zappa, you can quote Frank Zappa on this show anytime. It's us or them. This effectively permits J.P. Morgan to manipulate the silver commodities market. So what do you think it means? The government no longer maintains the charade of law and corruption, that it no longer needs to be veiled by any mask. Does it mean that the opinions of common people and laws of countries no longer matter? Do they still count our votes each November? Thank you, Rick. Listen, this is a government run. This is a government of the banks, by the banks, and for the banks. Get
Correct.
It? Absolutely. There's no other way to look at it. When the Federal Reserve can propose a law, which is probably going to be moving through Congress pretty quickly, along with the law allowing states to go bankrupt, asking to repeal the right of rescission, which means that if you buy a house with crooked, forged, fraudulent documents, you cannot take the bank to court until you've paid off the loan. And Chris Martinson was a great guest. I also love Chris. And he's just written a piece, and all his stuff is now starting to appear on our world news desk. He's going to be contributing stories there, too. Is that all they're doing now is just changing the rules whenever and however they want to. And this is coming up on the Dmitry Orlov aha moment. You know what you were talking about, Bob. What do you want to say about the silver and the banks and all that?
Well, the rule of law, like the Constitution itself, is just kind of a pleasant memory.
Mm-hmm.
We're tracking the whole process of ancient Rome, where they preserved the rituals and the ceremonies of the Republic long after it was completely dead and the empire was firmly in place.
Right.
And that's what we're doing right now. All this talk, this reading of the Constitution on the House of Representatives, I actually wanted to just throw up.
Same hypocrisy. Same here. I just watched, and here's where I have to pay some praise to somebody I don't ordinarily offer praise to, but that's to Alex Jones and InfoWar. I'm not going to be recommending him to anybody, but he just released a really good, like hour and 35 minute interview with Russell Means of the American Indian Movement.
Oh, really? I've met him.
And well, I have a connection to him through a good friend, Skip Mayhawk, who was an elder with the Dakota Sioux, who fought with Russell Means at Wounded Knee. And I love Russell Means. And the beautiful part about the film is the whole film is just Russell Means talking. And we should all sit at his feet like we would sit at the feet of an elder, the way traditions were passed in days of old. But he said that, you know, the Constitution, which came from Native American peoples, actually, I think it was the Cherokee Nations, is a beautiful document, but there's not a snowball's chance in hell that we're doing anything but like living the Constitution right now. So, I'm in complete agreement with you there.
And that's one of our problems, and contributes to the ongoing race for the ash heap of history. Because this isn't the first time this whole thing has come around. It's happened again and again in history elsewhere, and as the rule of law degrades, then that just passes down. Violence increases, the inequality sets in, the violence increases, and there are just no good outcomes. It's a dystopic spiral that doesn't stop until you hit the ash heap of history. Look at most recently the old Soviet Union. Everyone knew that the rule of law there was a joke, that the whole thing was rigged to benefit those who were in power, who had access, and people are increasingly aware of that now. And it used to be that you could know that, but really not talk about it because it just wasn't politically acceptable. But now that kind of is going away, and that's a help. People are seeing the naked emperor, that the emperor, in fact, is naked, and there's no point in commenting about his mm-hmm. clothes because his clothes aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
He's standing there, a pot-bellied 60-year-old man, naked as the day he was born. And
were you in my bathroom today?
And it's an ugly sight, as speaking as one who's 58 years old.
My dog doesn't think so. Rags is doing good, by the way, for all of you fans of Rags, my dog out there. You know, we have to keep it light here. I'm in complete agreement, and I cannot see that it's going to be long at all before the wheels really start to come off more. The more they try to tell us that a recovery is here, when 1 in 7 Americans is on food stamps, that, you know, that things are getting better as unemployment continues to skyrocket. Real unemployment's now between, like, I guess, what, 25% or more? And you know, so as these lies continue to roll out, the nakedness goes away very quickly. And I'm reading all these stories. We just posted a couple more in the last 2 days about major law enforcement cuts. Newark is, and police forces all over New Jersey. That's where Tom Brown lives. Well, he can take care of himself. But, you know, they're being cut, and the predators are starting to come out. And in major metropolitan areas, there's a lot of really not nice people who will come out for the easy pickings. And that's something that I think we all really need to acknowledge and look at head on. We can't pretend that everybody's going to go rosily into this mess that's coming.
We have to build alternative structures in the midst of the ruins of the collapsing old structures, and we need to get those structures in place so that when the roof and the walls do collapse, we have something between us and the collapsing.
Yes.
So that we aren't crushed by it.
Yes.
You know, and that's where I think transition is the transition movement is right on, in that that's what they're doing, is they're building local structures. That's
yes.
what we're doing in the Oklahoma Food
yes.
Cooperative.
Yes.
You know, is trying to develop a local food system, and we're still a long ways from being there, but I take some comfort in the fact that I live in the center of a state with 5 million cattle and 3 million people. So
yeah.
Almost twice as many cattle as people. So that's
all
true
right,
the Great Plains in general, I think.
On my way down there to visit you someday, I'll stop and pick up some corn in Iowa or something. We can do a barbecue.
Right.
Throw another script on the fire, as people will be saying in Hollywood.
Well, I'm disguising all the logs that I'm pulling off my lawn as firewood. They suggested that I have them all hauled away on big trash day. But the law says that I can keep firewood so long as it's up 12 inches off the ground. So I went and got some pallets and cinder blocks. We already have one platform for firewood because we have a wood-burning fire stove. But we're going to make two more so we can hang on to all of our logs, and they'll just be cleverly disguised as firewood.
Bob, you're telling me that the logs were sitting in one place, arranged neatly, serving an ecological function. And now if you move them to another place and stack them, they'll be doing exactly the same thing. They'll still be rotting, but that's legal.
Well, except they'll be stacked 12 inches up off the ground where they can't come in contact with the ground, and all stacked in one spot rather than neatly arrayed around the yard to make boundaries and things like that. So,
there's
yes.
no shortage of stupidity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, an ecological illiteracy, utterly. And then there's the kind of metaphysical fact that for 11 years they were just fine, and then all of a sudden, by the opinion of one code inspector with a gun, she didn't actually have a gun, but I feel that inspectors like that come equipped with the power of government, so they come equipped with the power of the gun. They were magically transmuted from being whatever they were the day before to being trash and debris, and it's an abuse of power. It's an abuse of discretion. There's no doubt about that. But you know, I thought about digging my heels in and fighting real hard on it. But then I thought, you know, you have to be wise as a serpent and
yes.
harmless as a dove, and you have to know when to, you know, fold your cards and when to play them and when to bluff them.
Yes.
And so you know, we figured this idea. Okay, well, we'll just disguise it all as firewood. You know.
One of the ways that I've survived all these years through all the crap I've been through, with the exposés and everything else. I'm not going to do that over again. It's too long a story and too sad. Is because I have known when to pick my battles.
Yep.
And that's an art that needs to be developed. That's a skill as fundamental as learning how to make fire if you're out in the wilderness. And that can be done. There's a course that Tom Brown's going to be giving, Urban Escape, here in Los Angeles this summer, and I look forward to participating in that in some way or another. I can be maybe a street thug, the more people can build those muscles in advance of needing them, the better off they're going to be. I think, Bob, that's been clear to you and me for a long time. How long have you been at this?
Well, I first started grinding grain for bread in the and dumpster diving in the early 1980s.
All right.
And have been pretty convinced that things were going to hell from actually in 1977. I was living in the Bay Area in California, and I looked around and I thought, you know, if things go really bad, this would not be a good place to be. And so I moved to Salt Lake City because I thought that would be a better place to be. And then I came back home here in the 90s because I thought it would be even better to be closer to home where I grew up and in an area with less extreme winters, although unfortunately the extreme winters seem to be making an inroad here in Oklahoma these days.
I'm looking at several different options because I don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that really wants to move to Northern California and participate in the wonderful changes that are taking place up there. I got financial issues around that, but that's something that's open with a possibility, circumstances permitting, and a wish. I'm also looking at deepening my ties here in case things happen fast, but I'm also looking into a boat. I mean, my lifeboat might actually be a boat in the end. I don't know. Sometimes it's just best to get out of the way, you know.
And certainly a boat, if you're on a coast, is a good thing to do, is a good way to do that. I like the Great Plains. Generally, these are energy-producing areas. The population density is low. The agricultural production is high. And, yes, it's very fossil fuel-dependent, but there's actually just a lot of storage of food, you know, like our 5 million head of cattle on the hoof here in the state of Oklahoma.
1 minute left.
Is a very important resource. But I think that people need to decide where they want to be and get there pretty quick.
Bob, how can people find your incredible group, Running on Empty, on Yahoo? Because you have archived like 70,000 messages over, maybe a decade of work with a lot of wisdom in there and a lot of preparation. How do they find you?
A decade this year. Go to www.yahoogroups.com and then just search for Running on Empty 2, the number 2. And you'll find us.
Or ROE 2?
I haven't actually searched for that, Running on Empty 2 actually brings us up, for sure.
Okay.
ROE 2 may get you a political group.
We are running out of time. There's so much more I want to talk about. Bob, you're going to come back on this show. I want to ask for your wisdom and input on a fairly regular basis. Next week, my guest is Cynthia McKinney, former six-term congresswoman from Georgia. We'll be back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.
Thank you very much.